Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 53, we feature an interview with one of ESPN's top executives to shine more light on their soccer coverage. Plus, we discuss exciting news for this weekend's coverage of the Premier League, as well as how one major network may be losing the regional channels that broadcast a lot of soccer. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnaya. Kartik, how are you?
I'm doing well, Chris. Thank you.
All right. Well, actually, before we kick it off, just for the new listeners who've had a chance to listen to either the interviews with Alexi Lalas or Rocco Commisso or the other episodes that we have, this show is really focused on talking about the coverage of soccer, like the tagline says, on TV, online, and apps. So we go deep into everything from commentators in terms of production, streaming in terms of all the different options that are out there, all the news that affects you, the TV or streaming viewer. And all of us love soccer, so we'll jump right in. Kartik, so what have you been watching this past week?
Well, we taped our show last week right after the draw on FS1, which prevented me from watching live the ESPN FC draw special, which started right as soon as FS1 signed off at noon Eastern time on Friday, or 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. I can't remember what time, but they were courteous. They're not a rights holder. They didn't want to trip over Fox, but they had a special right after. And it, I had DVR'd it. It blew FS1's away. The depth, FS1's presentation and analysis, the depth of analysis, and the knowledge of what I would call less sexy national teams, teams like Senegal, teams like Peru, teams like Colombia and Australia. It just blew away anything we heard on Fox. There was. I think the most noteworthy thing for me, beyond just how good the show was, how good the analysis was, they even brought in Taylor Twellman, who was it's 9 o'clock in the morning there, or 8:30 in the morning in Seattle, the morning after the Seattle playoff game against Houston, MLS playoff game. They brought Ian Dark on live from London. They had Stuart Robson and Gab Marcotti in studio, along with Hercules Gomez, Alejandro Moreno, Craig Burley, Shaka, the usual suspects, with Dan Thomas hosting. The thing that was most noteworthy for me, outside of everything that was well done, was the on their former colleague Roberto Martinez, who is coaching Belgium, who is, depending on who you ask, a favorite in this tournament or a tournament that a team that might just bomb out of the tournament. Craig Burley brings up Belgium when they go to the group that Belgium is in, which includes England, by the way. When he mentioned you started rattling off the names of their front of the pitch, from forward backwards, basically saying Lukaku, Mertens, De Bruyne, Hazard, and it was at that point the debate really kicked off, because then Marcotti, who likes Belgium, who likes their personnel, said, well, now that you've named those first four guys, that's as good as what we're talking about with France and Germany in the same positions, right? We're saying they're the favorites in this tournament, and Brazil, they're the favorites in this tournament, the guys you've just named, and you could keep going, obviously, with the Belgian team. Then Stuart Robson got in the middle of it, saying essentially that he didn't have any faith in Roberto Martinez as a manager, and that's something that I can concur with from the Premier League days. The closest Roberto Martinez ever has gotten to the World Cup is sitting on this set with us at ESPN these last few World Cups. And then there was a vigorous debate about Martinez. But I found that interesting because Robson was basically saying he's never been to the World Cup as a player. He's never been to the World Cup as a manager. He has only been to the World Cup like the rest of us here on this set. And that kind of shaped the rest of the discussion about Belgium. I'll say this. I mean, I tend to be someone who, and I think anyone who listens to the show knows this, leans a lot on history in my analysis. But with Belgium, it's difficult because they don't have that footballing pedigree or history. But the names and the qualities just seem too good to write them off, especially when there are flaws in all the other top teams right now, in my opinion. So that's where I stand on that.
Yeah, Stuart Robson's I missed it, but his criticism of Roberto Martinez, he could say the same thing about Jose Mourinho. I mean, it wasn't a player, never been close to a World Cup. I'm sure at some point in his career, Jose will get a chance to manage a national team. But a little bit of unfair criticism of Roberto Martinez. When you mentioned Roberto Martinez, Kartik, I had a think in the back of my head. I was like thinking, like, well, what if this could be a potential U.S. national team manager in the future if Belgium crash out and or maybe crash out of the second round? I'm sure he's on a long-term contract, but he's the type of figure that is very charismatic, very analytical. He's been one of the biggest hits from the World Cups. On ESPN in the last few years or last few tournaments, but there's a lot of course there's a lot of question marks about his coaching style. But you never know. Maybe not this cycle, but maybe in a few years from now, we could see Martinez at least interviewing for the job.
You are not the first person to mention that to me in the soccer media in this country, and you aren't the second person either. There are two other prominent media members who privately have had that conversation with me that for them would be the ideal U.S. soccer coach or U.S. men's national team coach after the World Cup because he obviously has a depth of understanding of the United States from his ESPN work. He's lived the majority of his life now, basically his whole adult life, in Wales or Scotland or England, and he has a progressive style of football. So, and the thinking is he would be attainable, unlike some of the other names you hear.
Right.
Plus
Klinsmann. I mean, that's how he got the job. Remember, it was like what was it the 2008 Euros or was it the 2006 World Cup where he was working for ESPN as an analyst and critiquing the U.S. men's. Oh, it would have been the 2006 World Cup probably or 2010. I don't know, but 2010 and critiquing the U.S. men's national team and being very intelligent, very smart, paved the way really for him to get the job for the U.S. men's national team. And Martinez, too, I can see him being a very clinical, kind of a premeditated type of person in a good way in terms of his career path. And I'm sure that the thought has crossed his mind in the past. And obviously, Belgium's a fantastic opportunity with in an amazing list of players on a piece of paper. We'll have to wait and see if they can turn it on in the World Cup, though.
Yeah, and I should mention Stuart Robson. I don't know if this is another dig at Arsenal and at Wenger, but he had to have a pop at Thierry Henry in this diatribe, also talking about he has an assistant that has no experience managing anywhere. And we knew who we were talking about, especially given it's Stuart Robson. I don't know that matters. I think Henry is a guy who's won a World Cup and has gotten to another final. I think that's given that this is an international job and not the number two at a club team in England. I think actually he's probably the perfect guy to have, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a tough one too because there's obviously a school of thought in terms of somebody that's gone through done the coaching badges, which I know Thierry Henry is going through that process. But has the experience, and maybe there's some more experienced coaches out there that would be great assistant coaches. But sometimes you need kind of that fresh perspective and somebody that the players can perhaps respect more on a player level and learn from. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. That'll be a fascinating story to watch in the World Cup for sure.
Yeah, before I move on, I should mention on that, Henri also obviously speaks French, and Martinez doesn't. Martinez, maybe he's learning now, but he has been communicating with his players in English, and as terrible as that might sound for a country that's split between what are essentially French speakers and Dutch speakers, the reality is I think everybody speaks English. So it's okay. Anyway, moving on. That same day, shortly after Leeds versus Aston Villa, John Champion was on the call. I did not get to finish this. This is the wonderful thing about ESPN3, by the way, Chris. I did not get to finish watching this game live. And I came back and resumed it from the same point on ESPN3 because it holds your place. 2.5 days later, Sunday night, and finished up watching, closed my weekend out with John Champion. I opened my weekend with John Champion also. Imagine calling this game. Yeah.
That's the way it should work. So that's fantastic. And hats off to BAMTech for, improving, I think, the broadcast signal in terms of the quality. But yeah, that's for those who haven't had a chance to watch the championship much lately, myself included, definitely check out ESPN3, which you can get through your cable provider or through Sling Orange if you don't have a if you're a cord cutter like myself.
Yeah, I should actually say I closed my weekend out with Wolves in Birmingham City in the championship on Monday, a Monday afternoon fixture, again on ESPN3. And I have to say this. I don't know if it's the signal from BAMTech and from the EFL Productions in London. I think the actual color and camera work for a lot of these championship games might be better than some of what I'm seeing from Premier League Productions. Maybe that's a bit of a stretch. Maybe I'm being too critical, but I really like I like the production. I think that that's really improved. The championship games, when you would watch them, let's say, but even before they were on BN, when they were on Fox Soccer Channel, it just seemed to be very low-end production compared to the Premier League. And I think they've taken the best from Premier League Productions, incorporated it in their broadcast, and then they've got some other good camera work. I guess where there would be the drop-off is that they don't have the two-man booths. They don't have those really good co-commentators in the booth like Premier League Productions does or like the broadcasters from the Premier League do. But I really have enjoyed so I watched two championship games this weekend. Really beginning to enjoy that league again as I used to many years ago. Moving on, Arsenal and Man United, a game I think just about everybody probably watched, a three-man booth for NBC. I have to say again, and this has been a constant theme on this show, Chris, that Arlo White does a lot of talking. And it's noticeable in games with as much back and forth action as this match. This match was a cracker by any definition. It was one of the best, or I should say not best, because I think there were a lot of defensive errors. One of the most entertaining matches of football you'll ever see, alongside that Schalke-Dortmund game we talked about last week with Holden, Keith Costigan on FS1. This was wildly entertaining, but unlike Costigan and Holden, there was a lot more chatter going on. And I don't think it's necessarily because of Lasso and Dixon. It's because White talks a lot and has to describe and enunciate everything, which I think does appeal to a certain segment of the audience, and will point out that I thought it was perfectly fine the next day. He called Man City and West Ham, and that game was a little more labored. It was a little slower in the build-up play, and I kind of enjoy a commentator who has anecdotes and can keep you engaged in the match in that situation, and I think White's perfect for those sorts of occasions. But for this game, it was too much, honestly.
That's the thing, though, too, for those listeners who may have missed it. I mean, definitely go back and listen to our interview with John Champion and Taylor Twellman that we did. It would have been this past summer for the International Champions Cup. But John Champion talks about really the art of commentating, and his philosophy is knowing when to be quiet, knowing when to be silent. Because in many ways, the game will speak for itself in terms of the action. Martin Tyler is probably also another perfectionist at this in terms of letting the game breathe. And that's a huge, huge difference to how American sports are commentated. And the reason really that Arlo White, even though he's an Englishman with an English accent, to me is very American in terms of just the way he commentates games. He grew up, I think, for part of his life in the United States too, and visited here a lot. But to me, he's an American with an English accent. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just the style. And like you said too, Kartik, with a game like Arsenal Man United, where it's end-to-end action, back and forth, let the game breathe, let the game talk for itself, and definitely fill in some spaces in terms of, Lee Dixon or Graham Lasso adding some really fantastic analysis, which they often do, or a joke here and there. But Arlo, I mean, that's the biggest criticism I think I have of him, is just the lack of flexibility in terms of he has this one way of doing things and there he goes. But for a game like Arsenal Man United, where you want to change your style a little bit, I don't think he's able to do it.
Yeah, and you could say he's got a more American style, and I guess that might be the case if you watch MLS games on the local channels or the local broadcast. They have very chatty announcers, a lot of guys who do other sports. But I have to say, even when you talk about what are soccer-specific guys or what are almost soccer-specific guys. Now, in the case of John Strong and J.P. Delacam, or J.P. Stoll has done the hockey from time to time, they're less chatty when it comes – they will be when they need to be, right? But they're able to adjust if they're in a game, calling a game like this. And I've noticed this with some very good Bundesliga games that, or Champions League games John Strong's called. He has changed his commentary style. He has adjusted to the reality of that particular match, which is that you need to let – the game breathe, and you don't have to enunciate every single thing. So I think, if anything, Arlo White has got his own style, because the top Americans calling this sport are not as are not mimicking him necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if John Strong could ever work for NBC again. He did in the past before, obviously with his contract with Fox and with the World Cup, and I'm sure getting at the World Cup final and future World Cups to come, that won't happen, you mean, probably for another decade. But it would have been it would have been interesting to see John Strong in Arlo White's spot to see how things might be a little bit different. But that's not going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, because of our internal – the one real intense derby we have in this country is between Seattle and Portland, and their fans act accordingly, like fans do in England and Germany and other countries about their rivals. The John Strong-Arlo White conversation is always a difficult one to have in this country, because Seattle fans reflexively take Arlo White's side and Portland fans reflexively take John Strong's side. So it's almost – I almost wish that it were two other commentators. We were having these conversations, yeah. And the top commentators at two of the networks were tied to different allegiances or different clubs in their previous work in soccer. So anyway, moving on, talked about Man City, West Ham, talked about Birmingham City and Wolves. Wolves, very, very good, very entertaining. They're going to be in the Premier League next year almost certainly. Let's talk a little bit about the ESPN FC show. Stuart Robson continues his stay in Bristol from Sunday to Tuesday, which just gives so much value to the analysis. Robson knows I don't know how he knows so much about football, honestly. And when we had this conversation before on the show, but even MLS, when it's coming up with Herc Gomez or Ali Moreno, he's able to chime in some very analytical points in the Robson way, be kind of argumentative, but make sense, and he's usually right, right? I'm not sure he's right about Belgium, but in most other cases, he's right. So excellent that he was able to stay on for a few days in studio. They get him often via satellite from London, but he was actually in studio this week, both Friday and then Sunday, Monday, four times, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. New set for ESPN FC. I'm getting used to it. I guess it's snazzy in a sense that it looks more modern and technological, but the green is gone, which has been kind of the green and blue motif, which has been kind of the trademark of the show since the show launched in the summer of 2013. And prior to that, when they had press pass, they had a very kind of defined look as well. This looks just like any other ESPN studio show. So I'm not sure I'm in love with it yet, but it'll grow on me. And
let me chime in on that one too, Kartik. Another thing that's related but slightly different is that a lot of the listeners may have noticed, or some of them may have noticed, that ESPNFC.com has gone, the actual website. So
correct.
Which is in conjunction with the actual show. But what they've done is ESPNFC now redirects to ESPN.com. So what they've done is they've rolled a lot of the soccer coverage into the ESPN.com website. I know we talked about this last week, that there were layoffs at ESPN. A lot of the layoffs that happened were on the production side and kind of the behind-the-scenes staff. I'm not sure. It sounds like maybe a lot of those layoffs, or some of those layoffs, were on the digital side. And that might be a reason why they've kind of rolled things under. But in terms of timing, I think that it's not coincidental that the ESPNFC change on the website happened at the same time, or pretty close to it, for the actual set on the TV side too.
Yeah, I think that now, when you're in the ESPN soccer site, if you go to ESPNFC.com, it redirects you to the regular ESPN site, and there's a soccer tab at the top, on the top bar, along with college football, college basketball, NFL, NBA, whatever else. It's one of the featured ones. You don't have to go into the more menu, and it's now same content, just kind of embedded in the ESPN site. One other note on this, Chris, they're not quite at the Fox Sports.com or FoxSoccer.com level yet of going from written content to video, but they have gone, since these layoffs, I've noticed, much more video heavy. There's far less written content on the ESPN.com sites or ESPN.com, you know, each tab, college football, college basketball, soccer, than there used to be. There is still some written content. You will still get articles from Jeff Carlisle and Gab Marcotti, most prominently on there. But there's more videos and there is more wire service reports.
Yep. Changing times, unfortunately. So what else, Kartik, have you been watching? Anything else?
No, I guess the ESPNFC Wednesday Kathy Carter interview by Alexis Nunez, which was a bunch of softballs and has created a litany of controversy, I would say, for lack of better description, in the social media world of American soccer. I guess the sense is that ESPNFC has not booked other candidates for U.S. soccer president, whether it be Carlos Cordero, who's a sitting member of the U.S. soccer board, whether it be Steve Gans, who's a very respected attorney and who has represented multiple entities in soccer on both sides of the Atlantic, Premier League clubs and youth clubs and youth associations and soccer associations in the U.S., or it be Eric Winalda and Kyle Martino, who are on leave from rival networks. So, there was a significant backlash, at least among the more critical elements of U.S. soccer to begin with, by about this interview being granted to begin with. And then she didn't have much to say, honestly. It was almost like one of these personal profiles rather than any sort of critical analysis or critical interview related to this race that she's just entered.
Yeah, it was really disappointing. I mean, ESPN we hold in high regard in terms of their journalistic side of things, or even television coverage side of things. They're not perfect by any means, but in many ways they try hard. But in this case, it was a really, really poor interview. And I watched it, and it was word for word. I mean, her answers sounded exactly like something that Don Garber or Sunil Gulati would say. She may as well have had the words status quo printed on her forehead. I mean, even her mannerisms, even the way that she answered the questions, is very, to me, robotic in a way that it was almost like a clone of Don Garber or a clone of Sunil Gulati.
Yeah.
It was very, very, I mean, I watched this. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Chris, I and others are looking for a reason to believe that she may not be Sunil Gulati or Don Garber, because I think some of us are very much fascinated with the idea of having a woman lead U.S. soccer. But the way she's answered questions, the way she's conducted herself in the first few days, just reinforces all of the negative fears we have. Those who want reform in the sport and want a different direction in the sport of this country have of someone who is as tied to the establishment. And one of the other candidates running for U.S. soccer president, I'm not going to say who, and I conversed yesterday, and this person reminded me that Kathy Carter was actually there at MLS when they started MLS. Right. So she is the very embodiment of the establishment. She predates Don Garber in terms of her involvement with Major League Soccer. So it's a thing that I would like to see maybe her step out a little more, but very, very cautious, very programmed, very rehearsed, very uninspiring is how I would describe that interview.
Yeah, and if there's a written transcript of this interview available, it would, I mean, if you replace the words Kathy Carter with Don Garber or Sunil Gulati, it would sound word for word exactly like something that they would say. Very, very non-specific, very kind of just pie in the sky, very much, we need to look at that type of thing, but no real answers there. So, yeah, really disappointing debut in terms of the interview from by her, but also the interview that ESPN gave her, which was extremely weak in terms of the questions that she was asked. And it sounded like it was almost like pre-rehearsed in terms of she knew what the questions were ahead of time, but we don't know that for sure. In terms of some of the other things I watched, so this past week in Kartik, as you know, I've got four kids. Three of them play soccer actively. So this entire weekend was, I watched hardly any soccer, which is probably the first time since last summer, perhaps, that I actually watched so little soccer. So I've got kids.
Hardly, sorry, sorry to cut you off, but hardly any professional soccer on television. I bet you were watching soccer all weekend.
Well, the time that I did have to watch, I watched 100% soccer, except for Curb Your Enthusiasm on Sunday night. But I did get to watch Stoke against Swansea. That one I watched live, actually, before one of my kids' games. And I think I mentioned this maybe on the podcast maybe 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, probably 2 months ago. The Swansea definitely are going to go down, and no surprise in this game in terms of their defeat, and no surprise that they're bottom of the table. It's just the worst Swansea team I've seen in probably in a couple of decades. It's absolutely pathetic. So they're done and dusted unless there's some big changes. But supposedly, no changes are going to happen until at a minimum after the January transfer window. And by that point, it's going to be too late. In terms of some of the other coverage I watched the Athletic Bilbao against Real Madrid first half on beIN Sports. Didn't get a chance to watch the second half. And then I watched the Arsenal-Man United game on highlights. And that one, I think I did, because I'm a cord cutter, I missed the game live. I forgot to record it. And I think I watched it on NBC Sports app. And I logged in using my Fubo TV credentials so I could go ahead and see, you mean like the 5 minute or 10 minute highlight reel of that one. On Tuesday and Wednesday, I watched the UEFA Champions League. And for me, Kartik, at this point, the only way for me to watch Champions League right now is, unless there's a huge match on that I can't miss, is Multi-Match 90 and with Ross Dyer. And to me, that's the best way to experience the Champions League when I don't have a team that's in the tournament that I'm hoping that they'll win, of course. But, of course, Swansea's nowhere near that. But watching the Multi-Match 90, to me, is a fantastic experience, just watching the goals flying in back and forth, and especially Wednesday, too, with Liverpool just winning 7-0 against Spartak and goals flying in Real Madrid against Dortmund and so on and so forth. But really a very entertaining way to watch soccer and just a great experience. And, of course, on Tuesday on the UEFA Champions League pregame show, which it is a pregame show, but oftentimes, almost always, they have the Grant Wall news segment, and they led off with the Cathy Carter story, which I thought was just really unfair to a lot of the other candidates, including Cal Martino, Eric Winalda, Steve Gans, and these others that have had very little, if any, media exposure in that news segment, but they led off with the very predictable. We've been talking about this for months, but it just seems so easy in terms of the way it's set up, in terms of Grant Wall beIN fed stories, or it seems that way, beIN fed stories and regurgitating those stories in that Tuesday or Wednesday news slot. Any thoughts on that, Kartik?
Yeah, it's... becoming a real talking point among folks, because I had mentioned many weeks ago on this program that I felt like perhaps Grant Wall was being used by some of his sources, and particularly sources in U.S. soccer or in Major League Soccer, to float trial balloons. Now, I have some degree of confirmation of that by a source on deep background who would know, who told me the original not his report on Fox, because that was already after Cathy Carter got into this race, but his initial tweet on Friday or Saturday, I can't remember when it was in fact trial balloon to see how it went. And once that had been leaked to him by design. And once that trial balloon was floated, it seemed to be okay. They made the switcheroo in terms of how Gulati getting out and Carter getting in. Now, in terms of the lack of exposure on this Fox pregame show that Winalda, who so obviously a Fox employee on leave of absence, Kyle Martino, formerly who worked for Fox and now is with NBC, and Steve Gans, Carlos Cordero, I guess, has gotten a mention, but nothing quite like the segment with Kathy Carter, etc. That I think is pretty significant. There has been really no discussion of how the race is shaped up outside of the very elite executive MLS U.S. soccer boardroom status, right, where it's a battle between Carter and Cordero representing, at least in terms of that framework, more of a reformer than Carter. But Fox and this pregame show have not discussed the masses on the grassroots level, which include people who actually do vote in this election, because people will just say, oh, that's Twitter, that's fans, that's supporters, whatever. We all know that they're angry at U.S. soccer. There are a lot of people at the Adult Association and youth level, AYSO level, small amateur league level, who are fed up with U.S. soccer, who are going to back someone other than Cordero or Carter. Mm-hmm. That are the most attractive candidates to them right now are Winalda, Gans, and Martino. And there's not very much discussion of that while they talk about this race. So I think it's a little bit incomplete. And maybe Grant Wall, since he is a good reporter in some respects, will talk to people and get that perspective in the next few weeks. Although I don't know if he's talking to the right people. I don't know what's going on. But I would caution people who are basing their perceptions of the race on what they're seeing on Fox that it's not the race is not quite going the way that they might be shaping it in these segments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's any collusion by Fox in terms of the relationship with USSF or MLS. I think it's just in many ways that what it seems to be, again, from the outside looking in, it just seems to be so easy in terms of whether it's USSF or Major League Soccer going to Grant Wall and feeding him with these opportunities, these exclusives to run these stories, knowing the news cycle is so predictable in terms of, you mean, having some news that they can announce on a Tuesday broadcast, maybe on a Monday. Kathy Carter, even in a New York Times piece, announces that she's going to run. And then on Tuesday, then it's an opportunity for Grant Wall then to talk about, have an exclusive interview with Kathy Carter and then reveal some of those findings there. And at the same time, Fox has a relationship with Sports Illustrated. And at the very same time, Sports Illustrated runs that story, which is really a recap of what Grant talks about on the Tuesday news segment. But it's become so predictable in many ways, I think. And that's, I don't know, it just seems to be, it's almost like that it's propaganda hour or propaganda 10 minutes that USSF and MLS knows in terms of having the relationship with Grant Wall, feeding him the stories, and then Grant go ahead and actually breaking the stories on the Tuesday. And then, you mean, the masses kind of react to that and, retweet the news or break the news, share the news out, and there it goes. To me, at the end of the day, Not that there's anything wrong with that, but to me, I'd like to see Grant be more fair and balanced in terms of not just having all these USSF stories or these Major League Soccer stories, but talking about some of the other leagues, talking about some of the other individuals, but not being so, to me, almost like transparent in terms of how much he's pushing the USSF agenda.
In fairness, I will say that we used Grant Wall's segment on that Fox pregame show to break a story about the Fort Lauderdale Strikers in NASL, and I was involved in that leak. So he will talk about non-MLS stories or non-USSF stories from time to time, but it's far and few between.
Yeah, but Kartik, when was that? Like 2 years ago?
Yeah. It was over. Corresponding match day 2 years ago. Yeah. No, sorry, 3 years ago.
Oh my God. Wow.
2014. Yeah. December 2014. So correct. My point is that it's gotten less and less frequent, those sorts of things now. down the road. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, we're in a position where I think they and I get this. If you're a journalist and you are in the media and you're at an MLS or U.S. soccer rights holder, it's the same thing because of Soccer United Marketing negotiating a joint contract for those two entities. There is some nervousness about how you cover this race because I think it's pretty clear. Look, this isn't company secret here. It's pretty clear the people, the public, that be don't like Eric Winalda, right? That's absolutely clear. Mm-hmm. The powers that U.S. soccer and Major League Soccer, how they feel about Gans and Martino, probably don't like those guys very much either. Do they dislike him as much as Winalda? Probably not. But do they want to take a chance with either of those two guys right now? Probably not either. So, and then you've got Lapointe and Vinograd also saying interesting things. Not sure if those two guys will be in it for the long haul, but you've got five candidates saying very, very interesting, compelling things about reforming the system. And then you've got Cordero, who now is beginning to make noises about reform. So maybe it's your natural instinct if you're in the system, you're at a network that is a rights holder, just to kind of gravitate back towards that safe position. And that's human nature. It's not about being in the tank. It's not about being on the take. I think we all have those instincts if you're in an environment. And so at this point for those people, Chris, I think Kathy Carter and discussing her and maybe even advocating for her to a certain extent is a very safe and logical place to be. It's not where you and I are or where most of our listeners are, but I can kind of relate to it. I can understand it.
Yeah, definitely. It will be an interesting story to continue to watch very closely. And of course, we'll be covering it from now through till February and hopefully getting some of these candidates maybe on the show to interview. But it's fascinating news and a fascinating time in U.S. soccer history. So, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, and first thing I'll mention before we get right into our news segment is that there have been MLS Cup ads running constantly on ESPN networks during college basketball games. Watched four games this week, two Florida games, one Miami game, and then another game, a Texas A&M Arizona game. MLS Cup ads twice during all four games. So that's fantastic promotion by ESPN. A lot of people heard this during the Arsenal-Manchester United game, and it piped people's interest. Roberto Martinez, who we've talked about earlier in this show in reference to his management of Belgium, will join NBC Sports in the studio this week for the Manchester Derby and presumably also for the Merseyside Derby, which is right before the Manchester Derby, and he previously managed in that match. Derek Ray will commentate on the Merseyside Derby this weekend, which is right before the Manchester Derby. Sunday is going to be just such an exciting day in the northwest of England.
Yeah, in some ways, I mean, Kyle Martino going on hiatus with NBC until the election's over has actually brought us some interesting people coming in to appear on NBC Sports, kind of mixing things up. We talked last week about Mark Clattenburg, and then this weekend with Roberto Martinez. Roberto's a great studio person, so hopefully they can get the best out of him in terms of his really intelligent analysis, and he's a great watch. I really enjoy watching him when he's in the studio. Moving on, the next news is that Disney is reportedly in talks to acquire Fox Sports regional networks, but not FS1, in a potential 21st Century Fox sale. Now, this could be huge news for sports fans in the United States. For those of us who are used to watching everything from Fox Sports Florida, Fox Sports Arizona, you go down the list, there's tons of these Fox Sports regional channels. Well, Disney is reportedly looking to acquire these. And by doing so, this would be a huge coup, huge win for ESPN in terms of then changing those networks to ESPN regional networks. From a soccer-specific side, I don't think, Kartik, it's going to make that much of a difference, especially with Fox losing the Champions League and the Europa League rights next season. That's oftentimes the overflow channel for some of the Tuesday games and sometimes on Wednesdays for the Fox Sports regional networks to have those. But without the Champions League and without Europa League, it's not going to be as much of an issue. It could be an issue, though, for future World Cups. You mean if it's several games, well, usually two games that are probably the most going on at once. It's a good opportunity for Fox to use those channels. But what do you think? A big loss or no big deal?
It's an interesting conversation because they have using those channels since we had a phone call, I think, in 2009 with Dave Dickinson, right, where we talked about the use of the Fox Sports Regional channel. And how that gave Fox an extra stream of distribution. And this was at a time when they didn't have FS1 and FS2. So actually at the time, it may have been their greatest scope out of FX and Fox over the air. I think it is fairly significant because, as you mentioned, Champions League games have been put on there. There are often you may not be aware of this because you may not check the program for Fox affiliate Sun Sports or Fox Sports Florida. We have two regional channels here in the state that we get. But they show a lot of Bundesliga and Champions League games on tape delay.
Yep.
You know, a repeat. They're not on tape delay. They've been shown on some other network, and they're being re-aired during the course of the week. And just on Tuesday, there was a game – a college basketball game I went to find on ESPN3, which was an ACC Network Extra game. And the ACC Network itself is going to be an ESPN production launching, I believe, in 2018 or 2019. And that game was blocked out for me on my ESPN3. Turned out it had been given to the Fox Sports regional affiliate, one of the two here in Florida, a Miami Hurricanes game to air on a Fox Sports regional thing, even though it was an ESPN production. So there's already some bleed there, and I think it would be significant. Another point I want to make, it depends when the sale is closed, but National Geographic Channel is included in this proposal. They are going to be producing a lot of content for Fox's coverage of the World Cup. And presumably going forward for Fox's coverage of international soccer events. So I don't know how that works out. If Fox Sports is cut off from the capabilities, the documentary filmmaking capabilities of the National Nat Geo, what happens?
Yeah, Kartik, that's a good point about the Bundesliga. It's actually there's a ton of those games that are on, oftentimes on reruns there, and so the biggest loser in this, from a soccer perspective, actually could be the Bundesliga, which is a shame.
Yeah.
All right, Kartik, moving on.
Yeah, the EFL has issued a RFP, a request for proposal to potential partners, as it seeks to offer its central. It seeks offers for its central broadcast production requirements. The RFP covers all of EFL's broadcasting requirements, from filming and distributing over 1,500 matches every season to domestic and international audiences, to delivering enhanced production values for the live streaming of games online via the EFL's new digital platform, iFollow. There have been lots of complaints, Chris, as you know, yep, to us by fans of specific football league clubs of iFollow. Yet, as I said earlier in this show, every time I watch a game on ESPN3, I'm blown away by the production. Mm-hmm. So there's obviously a drop-off in the production capability from the games that they're showing as a feature game versus the games that are being dumped onto the iFollow platform. So I guess they're probably just going to try and make the production more consistent now.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there too, Kartik. This announcement by the EFL really, to me, is more about iFollow. I think from the TV production side, yes, improvements can be made, and perhaps maybe whether it's IMG or TWI or some other broadcasting production company could come in and perhaps do things differently. But to me, it's really about iFollow, especially with iFollow being really the way, the future that the Championship and the EFL is looking at in terms of generating revenue and having people around the world subscribing to iFollow channels for each of the clubs in the Football League that are participating, which is the vast majority. I think it's all about iFollow. And like you said, too, we've gotten a lot of complaints from people that have had tough experiences with iFollow. And I haven't had a chance to actually check it out this season. I do plan on doing so. But, big statement there from EFL. And hopefully this is a sign of an improvement. And hopefully it's going to be one of those things that won't be too late. Now, moving on to the last segment of the last news item, and that's DirecTV Now, the streaming package that's separate than DirecTV, and you don't need a DirecTV subscription to get. It's their streaming service. It's hit 1 million subscribers. Now, this is fantastic news for DirecTV Now in just less than a year, really, or about a year since launching. They've hit that 1 million mark. I think in many ways what they've done, too, is for people that were thinking about canceling the DirecTV package, they've offered the DirecTV Now as an opportunity to, you mean, get rid of the satellite dish, but still keep on streaming and stream all of your favorite channels, including many of the soccer channels. And at the same time, PlayStation View is going through some tough times. It's moving some of its Fox Sports networks to the sports add-on package, which is additional cost. While at the same time, both Fubo and DirecTV Now have been adding more and more of the Fox networks to a whole bunch of the cities nationwide. So, you mean, changing times. I mean, DirecTV Now is on the up. PlayStation View is going through some tough times. But Fubo and others are picking up the pieces.
Let me mention something real quickly here, Chris. My understanding is some of the people who have subscribed to DirecTV Now in the last year are former UVerse subscribers who, for whatever reason, maybe they're in an apartment building, maybe they're in a house where there's no good angle for a satellite dish, cannot subscribe to regular DirecTV. So that may have boosted their numbers somewhat, but still significant to hit the 1 million mark.
Yeah, absolutely, which is probably number two to Sling TV. I think Sling TV is over a million PlayStation views, under a million, so is Fubo. But looking like the number two streaming platform out there. Now, moving on to TV ratings, we don't have all of the numbers, but if you do want to see them, we'll publish them probably this weekend at worldsoccertalk.com. But the big one is Arsenal against Man United on NBC this past Saturday. And Kartik, maybe you can shine some light on this one in terms of the number and adding some context.
Yeah, it cleared a million viewers, which surprised me because we always hear, particularly from fans of Major League Soccer, how you can't compete with certain American sporting properties. And I had made the assumption that this game would get a lower number, over a million, as I mentioned, and it was going on at the same time as several college football championship games were going on. So it overlapped with the American Conference Championship between UCF and Memphis. It overlapped with the Championship of Conference USA between Florida and here, our local university, your alma mater, actually, Chris, and whoever they were playing. I think they might have been playing North Texas. And then most importantly, the Big 12 championship game featuring the Oklahoma Sooners, one of the favorites, one of the storied programs in college football, and Texas Christian University, so TCU. That was a huge game. That was on Fox over the air. The UCF game was on ABC over the air. And yet NBC did a million for a Premier League game. I think that's a very significant number. And to be honest with you, maybe it's an isolated data point, but I've been, as I think people know who follow me on Twitter and listen to the show, down on the ratings for soccer, down on Premier League ratings, down on MLS ratings. This is a significantly higher number. Maybe my expectations have been adjusted to being very negative, but this is a significant breakthrough in my mind, going up against some very big American sporting properties that were being talked up all week on ESPN SportsCenter and those sorts of programs.
Yeah, it's I believe it's the third best number this season for NBC. It goes back to kind of Kartik in terms of just the power of Manchester United in terms of their appeal nationwide to fans in the US. I mean, tons of Red Devils fans, and for the Premier League to be successful, continue to be successful and grow in the United States, it's important for Man United to do well. But it does have a huge impact, as well as Arsenal. Of course, there's a ton of Arsenal supporters. In other numbers, the Manchester City against West Ham game on Sunday, the NBCSN game. Now, this one for NBCSN and Telemundo combined got approximately 630,000 viewers. 253,000 of those were on Telemundo, which is a fantastic number. And then 392,000 on NBCSN. So all in all, actually a decent number. And I think there's definitely, with Manchester City playing such an attacking beautiful brand of football. I mean, they're becoming more and more appealing. And, yeah, big numbers there, too, for the Premier League. Now, Kartik, well, on the other extreme, the World Cup draw on FS1 on Friday from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern time, I can't believe how poor and how low these numbers were.
Yeah, look, this isn't meant to bash Fox because it's just a reality. When you take any event from ESPN, especially a big high-profile event that gets built up throughout the week on ESPN SportsCenter programs and other bumper programming, and you take it from any ESPN network, particularly ESPN, but the draw was actually on ESPN 2 4 years ago, and Chris, you and I, among others, were in Bristol for that event. Got some behind-the-scenes access to ESPN in 2013 for that. But you take any event from ESPN networks to FS1 or FS2, or particularly FS2, but FS1, the number is going to drop probably by 30%. So let's keep that in mind. Then you had the advent of the U.S. not being in the draw, and you had I think just also maybe the time being earlier than it had been with the draw in Brazil, and but only by an hour or two. You had this combination to just absolutely tank the rating. I do want to mention something else in the context of this this draw that I neglected to mention earlier, which is that ESPN has also adopted, I think, the Fox philosophy towards Mexico, to where when you're watching another sporting event, so I decided I was going to watch a college basketball game or something on ESPN Friday night, and there would be the crawl, the scroll with all the scores and from the other. So then when it got to the World Cup draw, they make sure they went in detail about Mexico's group, but they didn't go into detail about anyone else's group. So I think even ESPN from a news angle is adopting that very Mexico-centric stand. And in spite of doing that, that doesn't seem to have driven people to watch the draw.
Yeah. To be honest, though, Kartik, and this is not at you, but just in general, I'm really sick of the excuses. I mean, it's a poor number. 65,000 people watched this World Cup draw on FS1. Meanwhile, over at Telemundo and Universo combined was 370,000 people. But 65,000 viewers, I mean, that's worse than some of the Bundesliga games that they get on, you know, on a weekend, on a Friday with you know, Mainz or some other team that doesn't have a huge appeal. What does this say? I mean, to me, first of all, I think Fox does a really poor job at promoting that they actually had the draw. I mean, how many people, maybe mainstream people, or how many people actually knew that this draw was happening? As an example, I got press releases to announce the coverage of the draw from beIN Sports. beIN Sports had live coverage this past weekend on the English channel and the Spanish channel. I got press releases from Telemundo talking about their coverage. I got press releases from ESPN talking about how they were going to do kind of a post-match ESPN FC roundtable. I got nothing from Fox, not one press release, not one word. So that's part of the issue to me. It's not just me. It's just the entire media. If the media's not being contacted to let them know that Fox has the draw, it's a big deal to really play it up. Because for diehard soccer fans, the World Cup draw is a massive event, no matter if your country's in it or not. It is a huge occasion. I don't know. I'm just really disappointed with that number. The Telemundo Universo number is also a little bit disappointing, given that the numbers that Univision got, which were greater last time. Yes, US has an impact in these numbers, but there's got to be a lot more soccer fans than 65,000 people tuning in for a draw on FS1. And to me, this sends some really just a warning signs to Fox in terms of they have to get their shit together for this World Cup, because otherwise, you know, I mean, this is going to be a long haul. This is going to be you mean, a disaster. And we've got lots of different ideas of what they can do, but this is really pitiful. All right, Kartik, moving on to listener mailbag. So the first one's from Sunny SoCal Rob 25 through Twitter. And he says, I took a look at how ESPN SportsCenter covered the World Cup draw with no USA. As soon as SportsCenter came on the main ESPN, it was coverage about NFL and college football. The details about the World Cup groups were featured in the ticker at the bottom of the picture, as expected.
Yeah, and with an emphasis on Mexico, as I said earlier. And that I don't know if that's going to drive anything for them. It's unfortunate. Again, I think that outside of having Max Brado as host SportsCenter very regularly, which is good for soccer fans, you're not getting any kind of soccer centric thought from SportsCenter in the wake of the U.S. crashing out of the World Cup. It's now gone back to the back of the line again. And that was the ramifications. And this goes back to my whole feeling about how this country, unfortunately, has hitched its soccer fandom to a national team rather than to the organic elements of a club or grassroots soccer. But they're just massive ramifications in the media. You don't see this sort of problem in Italy or Chile or the Netherlands, in countries prominent soccer nations where their teams have not qualified for a World Cup. It has not impacted coverage of Serie A. It has not impacted coverage of football in that country, or coverage of football from that country in the English language press. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah, in the U.S. so far, I mean, Kartik, it's been all doom and gloom. It's been like, oh my gosh, it's the end of the world. The U.S. crashed out of the World Cup. You mean layoffs at 442, and you mean budget cuts here and there at Fox in terms of everything that they had planned for with U.S. being in the World Cup. Yes, it hurts, and yes, it's a factor. But to me, I mean, the World Cup and the sport is much bigger than your own national team. I mean, this is a global event. This is, this is debatable, but to me, it's bigger than the Summer Olympics. This is a massive, massive global tournament featuring, it's focused on sports and on athletes, on unsung heroes, on, superstars, on, all these things coming together. To me, this is a fantastic opportunity for Fox and for Telemundo to really get their arms around this, to embrace it. And also the rest of soccer media in the United States. I mean, it's not the end of the world. The U.S. is not in it. If anything, it's an opportunity to help fix things and change things so that in the future there is a chance perhaps that the U.S. could go far, to a final, who knows. But this whole doom and gloom, to me, then it kind of rubs off on everyone, even the casuals that might be not into the World Cup, because, they're a soccer diehard fan at the office building is kind of doom and gloom and not into the World Cup or not really excited about it. It rubs off on others. So I really hope that people start realizing that, and really the media networks start realizing that, the World Cup will go on without the United States, and it's still going to be a fantastic event. And if you're a soccer fan or a sports fan especially, this is a fantastic opportunity to watch a tournament. Yes, not the best tournament in the world in terms of it being bloated than it was in the past, but still, you've got all these countries coming from around the world to watch this great game. All right, moving on. John Patrick Manning tweeted us, and he said, "I thought the MLS Cup was this past Sunday, but it's not for yet another week. As you said on World Soccer Talk, fix the calendar. I'm a MLS season ticket holder. My Earthquakes made the playoffs, knocked out of the first round, but that was 39 days ago, 46 days before MLS Cup. I've totally moved on. My other team is Man United, who have played 8 matches since then, despite the international break." All right, moving on to Danny, and he tweeted us, and he says, "Upon hearing the interview that Will Soccer Talk did with Rocco Commisso, I understand his whole point better than before. I heard him get angry at times also, and that was good because it shows he genuinely cares about football in this country like Eric Winalda." Shai Gardner sent in an email. He said, "First, I want to say thank you for all the amazing work you are doing when it comes to watching football on TV. To be honest, without all of the amazing information you give for free on your website, I may have been one of those persons who just resorted to paying ridiculous cable fees, or when I can't see a game, go the old-fashioned route of streaming games online. Wink, wink." He says, "However, with the information I obtained on the podcast and from the various free cheat sheets on the World Soccer Talk website, I have now gone the route of Sling Blue plus the Best of Spanish TV add-on, which, as an aside, I definitely recommend because you get all the beIN Sports channels. I think you get the Univision channels too, in addition to the Fox channels. It's a good package. He continues. He says, my focus was always to see as many La Liga games as possible and a few Premier League games in addition to the Champions League. Although with this setup, I am also able to venture into other leagues as well. I really appreciate your podcast and website, and I thought I would take the time to simply say thanks. Such a wonderful pod, and the chemistry between the both of you are hilarious. May God bless you and keep up the awesome work. Well, thank you, Shai, for those kind words. We really appreciate it. And that's what we aim to do, is really kind of get the information out there so that soccer fans can make the best choices, the wisest choices possible in terms of all of the options out there. And last but not least, Dennis Hernandez tweeted this. He says, you mentioned in the podcast that the UEFA Nations League would no longer permit friendlies to take place. But with the Nations League having groups of three, national teams would only be playing on four out of the 6 days of the September, October, and November fixtures. This would still allow for two dates of friendlies.
Yeah, that's correct. Thank you, Dennis. I've corrected my analysis of that, seeing that. I think previously there were too many friendly dates on the calendar. Now, with two, and then you go right into Euro qualifying after, it's probably too few. I don't know what the balance is, but I prefer to have a Nations League than not have a Nations League and have just a bunch of friendlies. So I'm positive about this. And we're going to talk a little bit, I think, about this topic in our future topic of the week with Amy Rosenfeld.
Absolutely. So if you do have any questions, feedback, comments, anything, you name it, about watching soccer on TV, online or apps, email us at web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can tweet us at WSoccerTalk. Or hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. And we'd be more than happy to read out your comments or questions on air. Now, Kartik, moving on to our feature topic of the week. And this week we have an interview with Amy Rosenfeld from ESPN to preview the MLS Cup, as well as to discuss other matters soccer TV related. Just to mention in terms of this interview, we recorded it on Wednesday, so the Wednesday afternoon, I believe it was, and it was before the ESPN FC interview with Kathy Carter, just to put the interview into context. Any other thoughts you want to share before we hit play on this interview?
Yeah, I think it'll be fascinating for people to hear the level and depth of production for this MLS Cup coming up on Saturday. Exciting event, obviously, for so many on the North American soccer calendar. And then we get a little bit into to big events and Euros and the World Cups and of course, also the mentioned UEFA Nations League.
Yeah, plus we have a couple of exclusives in there, too. I think Amy reveals some interesting insights in terms of some of the work that ESPN has been doing, not related to the MLS Cup final, that should open some eyes in terms of what they've been doing behind the scenes. So thanks to Amy for sharing some of those details, and hopefully you'll enjoy the interview, and we'll be right back right after it. All right, everyone. Well, we're pleased to have a special guest on the World Soccer Talk podcast this week, and it is Amy Rosenfeld, who's the senior coordinating producer at ESPN. Amy, how are you?
As I said before we started, I'm in a little bit of awe because I have a long commute here to Bristol from Massachusetts, and your podcast accompanies me. So it's really, it's sort of awe-inspiring to actually be able to morph what I listen to live. So it's you guys are good company on 84 to the Mass Pike, and hopefully I'll be entertaining.
Okay. So Amy, for those listeners who may not be as familiar with your work, but also kind of your vision, what would you say is your philosophy on the way that you produce soccer for ESPN?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a tremendous soccer fan. My father introduced me to soccer. He grew up in the Depression in Middle Village, Queens, and his neighborhood, you know, everybody was an immigrant, and so he was very early on exposed to soccer, and, you know, soccer and hockey were his two main sports. So I have been a fan, you know, since I came out of the womb, and I think the philosophy that we have here is to try to always be able to present the match without getting in the way, to be always sort of additive to the viewer without being intrusive, without interrupting. If you are sitting at home and you have a lot of body English, this is what my father used to complain about. He wanted to be on the main game camera the entire time. If we get in the way of your ability to view the game, appreciate the game, understand the game, then we have completely lost the plot. So we are always trying to be additive with everything we do. And I think the other thing is, and listen, I think ESPN, you know, learned this lesson, that it is important to speak to a soccer savvy audience, that the game is so great that we don't really have to teach people necessarily, that the hope is that we are inclusive to a new audience, but that they're coming aboard because they see the great product and not because we have to do a lesson on the offside rule. So I think, you know, this talk of like talking down to the viewer, you know, that's certainly something that we never want to do, because as a fan, I don't want to be talked down to. I want to be invited in and appreciate the game without being insulted or feeling like I'm, you know, that I'm not part of the club, you could say.
Now, what can you tell us about Saturday's MLS Cup final from a ESPN television coverage perspective? Is there anything new or newsworthy worth mentioning in terms of the way that the biggest game of the season for Major League Soccer is going to be produced?
Yeah, I see. I was doing a little bit of research because I've been involved in a lot of MLS Cups, and I believe we might be at the point of the most cameras that we've ever incorporated into an ESPN or ABC MLS Cup. I think we're at 34 now.
Wow.
Now, those are not all manned cameras, and some of those cameras are shared. Our partners at TSN have graciously given a couple of their cameras. So we are well covered with cameras. Now, there's a danger there, because sometimes when you have a lot of toys, you get a little giddy and you do what we call overcutting, or, you know, exactly what my father would hate, which is he's happy if there's just camera one. But we're really excited to have, you know, I think Skycam brings a lot to soccer, especially as a replay or setting up a set piece. We'll have Skycam. I am really proud of our soccer group here at ESPN, who independently developed these goalpost cams that are used. It's only, as far as I'm aware, no one anywhere in the world are using these cameras embedded in the goalpost. And I think it really, there's an example where I feel was additive to the viewer's experience, because it really gives a definitive view of the goal line. So we're going to have those. So we have two of those in each net. They're at different heights, so two on each net. And then we're kind of playing around. We'll see what you guys think. Once again, you know, after a game, we're sitting around drawing a cocktail napkin, trying to figure out what's another cool thing to add. We're playing around with, you know, if we figure now with these goalpost cams, we kind of own the goal line. So you viewers will be able to have that definitive look. What's the next thing that we would like to provide a definitive replay look? And I kept sort of coming back to the penalty box. So we're playing around with a small camera that's basically on a very long pole and sort of utilizing it as a lockdown camera to frame kind of that penalty area. This is not super innovative. I mean, we played around when I used to do WUSA way back in the day. We had, you know, robotic cameras on at different heights and such. But I think we're just kind of playing around with other ways, especially with replay, to provide to you, the viewers, you know, that definitive, wow, yeah, he was in the takedown was in the box, or wow, did you see how he shook that defender right in front of the keeper, or whatever.
One more question before I let Kartik jump in. Kartik, so one question, Amy, is what about drones? Have you ever thought in terms of like overhead shots, whether it's whether it's a chopper or something like that? But any kind of experimentation with drones as far as kind of at least having a different angle of maybe the stadium from up above, or the fans coming into the stadium, or anything like that?
Yeah, no, I mean, you think like a producer, absolutely, you know, there's great interest in drones in a lot of coverage. When I used to work on X Games, we actually integrated live drone coverage into some of the ski and snowboard racing. The issue with drones, as you can imagine, although this is getting better, is that the restrictions flying over human beings is pretty great. So we're making progress in terms of the sophistication of the drones themselves, the quality of the certified pilots of the drones, it used to be people had to be a certain distance away, that now they can be a little closer. But you're absolutely right. That will be, in my opinion, sort of that next stage of really trying to capture the athleticism, the speed, the scope and scale of an event, that'll be the next version. So we're trying. We are, through the generosity of TSN, they're actually going to have a chopper for the game. So we'll have that sort of classic aerial coverage. But you're right, the drones lend themselves then to, like, really being intimate while still being able to provide some scale.
Amy, thanks for taking the time to join us today with this big MLS Cup broadcast that I think we're all excited about coming up. Was wondering, since this match is in Canada, it's in Toronto, and you have an established partnership with TSN, how much of a role will they play in your production? And does that, in fact, enhance your capabilities because you've got TSN also on site in Toronto broadcasting the match?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, for sure it helps to have a partner. Although I will say, as a longtime partner, maybe not from a business sense, but really from a personal sense, Univision and ESPN have partnered on a lot of projects. And as much as we are competitors, we also are partners because, look, it doesn't make sense for everybody. Back in the day, we used to do these things called side-by-sides, which means Amy would have her cameras and Kartik would have his cameras. They would be in the exact same positions. Well, that just doesn't make any sense for anybody. So I think, on many sports, but really soccer, because it's the soccer broadcasting community is a small one and we've all worked together a long time. We recognize that there are benefits to just presenting the game, in a big way. So, for example, we're giving all our cameras to Univision. They've returned the favor many times. We've gotten each other out of jams in foreign countries in terms of power and access and whatever. So, yeah, TSN, absolutely. We have a very strong relationship. We are taking a bunch of their cameras, and as I mentioned, the chopper. But, it's really, we're sort of all in this together. So, Univision will have access. We don't hold anything back from Univision's ability to either take our produced feed or cut to our individual cameras.
Let me ask about the timing decision and the programming decision. You've got a four-hour window for this match, which seems real exciting for those of us who want an end-to-end kind of bumper programming on either side as well. You've got a lead-in coming from college basketball, Indiana-Louisville game, which is a big rivalry and a game that a lot of people, including myself, will watch. Were all of those considerations? You've got a four-hour window for the first time, and you've got a lead-in from a big college basketball game, which I don't believe you've had in the past. Was that all worked on within the framework of trying to improve the number this time?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, and it's been a topic that I, you know, listen to as I travel the Mass Pike that you guys have talked about at length. We're all trying to find the sweet spot on time, network, day of the week, lead in. So, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting, first and foremost, to have a good lead in. It's exciting because it's on ESPN. It's exciting because there's some breathing room to, you know, do a good show. It's exciting because there's breathing room if the thing goes to penalties. And you want to get, obviously, you want to see somebody, you know, lift the cup on linear television. So, you know, these are all the scheduling, that when we have games, this is the thing we're constantly tweaking. You know, is it better? It's clearly better to be on ESPN. And I think right now for 2018, the target is to have, of the 36 regular season windows, I think we're aiming to have 32 on ESPN. Like, that's great. That's going to help any way you slice it, because it's, you know, as much as we love ESPN too, ESPN is sort of like a bigger destination for viewers. Then you have to wrestle with, do you want great lead-ins all the time? So, like, you're right. We have a nice hoop game leading in. Or do you want consistent time slots? So, I mean, I feel like, you know, we've done sort of kicked the tires on many different versions. I mean, the good news is playoffs ratings are up. You know, up is up. It may be, you know, sort of this one-time thing. I hope it isn't. But there's some nice momentum here. So we got to figure out what's going on. Is it just, you know, the interest in Columbus? Is it overall interest? I think we all have challenges with the nature of the schedule and the season. But, you know, my long-winded answer to your concise question, we absolutely take into account, you know, how can we benefit MLS by its placement. So, you know, we're on the air at 4:00. We're kicking at 4:30. There's some, you know, a little bit of breathing room here if, you know, the hoop should go a little bit long. So all these things, we have the benefit of a lot of events on our network, and sometimes those events kind of collide into each other. But hopefully this placement will give it a nice rating.
My last question.
Let me just jump in. I'm sorry. Switching gears for a second, Amy. How hard is it going to be to watch the World Cup this summer, knowing that ESPN isn't broadcasting it, and knowing that you've worked so intimately with these productions in the past that were, I mean, really world class?
Boy, he really, like, gets to the nitty-gritty. I thought there'd be, like, a few warm-up questions before I got to spill my guts emotionally. You know, look, I would be lying if I said I'm not massively, you know, let's see. See, there's the emotional part of me, and then I got to keep the pragmatic part of me that's an employee of ESPN. Personally, I am very disappointed that we no longer produce World Cups. However, I am a soccer fan, so I am excited to watch the World Cup. It's interesting. The Women's World Cup, the first one Fox did, was very tough for me. I think it's getting a little easier. I really was surprised at how difficult it was for me personally to actually watch, and of course I'm a huge fan. I quickly sort of got over that and then really enjoyed the coverage. They did a spectacular job, and, you know, it was an exciting tournament. It's really hard because there are so many people here at ESPN. One thing people don't know, the bulk of the people who work on soccer at ESPN are massive soccer fans who have been forever. So they put their heart and soul you know, into World Cup and Euros and such. And this company, I think you saw with South Africa and Brazil, really puts its armor behind it. So the ESPN was all in on South Africa, all in on Brazil. So, you know, that's a void as a television producer that it's very hard to replace. But, you know, you have to, we were excited to do Euros, we're excited to do another Euros, and, you know, you just have to move on. I they have a lot of challenges. I'm hopeful, and I shouldn't say hopeful, I'm confident they will do a really good job. They know big time television, and they certainly know soccer. They have challenges that we always face. Being in another country, what is the political climate? What are the internal issues in that country? What are the logistics? How big is the country? It's going to be. I wish them well because it's going to be hard. And it's funny because, you know, we've done World Cup in South Africa, Brazil, we did Euros in Ukraine and Poland, and we all kept saying, oh, finally, you know, we're going to do a Euros in France. We deserve this. It's been, you know, really tough on some of these other events. And then to be honest, Euros was the hardest event I've ever done in my career because, you know, we spent a year and a half solidifying our host set location. And a week before the event, we have to find a replacement because the Seine has flooded. So, and then we had tear gas in the compound because there was a labor strike. And then there was the daily issue of terrorism and risk. And this bag was left on the corner and no one's near the bag. Whose bag is it? Okay, we're going to do a controlled explosion. And oh, by the way, we have terrible hooligan situation going on in Marseille. So, It's interesting that France ended up being the hardest one I've ever worked on. So I am just, you know, really, I'm wishing them a lot of good luck because it's going to be tough. But they're up to it. They're up to it. I really think that that they will do a terrific job.
Yeah, Amy, following up on the World Cup, you have the rights for the European Nations League, which is a new kind of exciting tournament. If our listeners don't know about it, read up on it. It's something that I think most soccer fans embrace. What are your tentative coverage plans for that?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. I'll be very curious to sort of get the vibe on how people feel about this. I mean, I think that having something – I'll be curious what you guys think. Having something that isn't just a bunch of friendlies, I think is a good thing. I think competition that has meaning. So, you know, this competition will factor into Euro qualifying. So there's, you know, there's some incentive. It's also got a little bit of a pro-rel, you know, model, which I know you guys are excited to talk pro-rel. I think that we will, I cannot look you guys in the eye over the phone and say that it's going to be on the scale of Euros. That's just not practical. But in the same vein, it is our hope to make it more than qualifying. Like certainly when we get to, you know, the finals, we'd like to, you know, do something special there because it does have meaning. It's I worry a teeny bit about oversaturation. And frankly, I wasn't in love when UEFA expanded the Euro field. I think that took away something special about Euros, adding more teams. But I'm intrigued by this, and certainly it deserves a higher echelon of coverage than just, you know, a regular qualifier.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. It's kind of the jury's out because we haven't seen any of the games. And I think at the end of the day for the UEFA Nations League, it all depends how serious these nations take it. And I think within the first probably couple of game days, I think we'll know whether this is going to be a hit or not. In theory, in concept, it looks like it's going to be a big hit, but we'll have to see what happens on the pitch. I think that's where it matters the most. At least that's my viewpoint. Now, Amy, last question is, if the opportunity presented itself, would you be interested, ESPN, in hosting a USSF presidential debate?
The only reason I'm laughing, so I'll give you a little inside poker, and maybe this will get me in trouble, maybe it won't. So, you know, our president here at ESPN, John Skipper, massive soccer fan, and really he deserves the bulk of the credit for ESPN's growth in the sport and increasing our production value and our approach and all of that. So this is actually, you got to ask Bob Lee about this. He'll get a good kick out of this. So way back when the FIFA presidential campaign, if you want to call it that, was going on, Skipper had the idea, hey, let's host a debate. So I'm hucking over to Zurich, trying to find a location. Our programming guys are like daily talking to all the different candidates, trying to get them all together in one place. And that was a challenge. And so we spent, I'm going to say like a couple of months. We were doing daily calls. Bob Lee still laughs about the 3 o'clock calls because we would do daily calls to sort of say, hey, you know, what's the update? Oh, this guy's in. Oh, this guy's out. This guy won't be in if this guy's in. And it was like a nightmare, as you can imagine. So finally, we just said, you know, forget it. So it's interesting, as this U.S. soccer campaign has, as the candidate pool has increased and gotten very interesting. You know, look, I think it would make for interesting TV, probably for a little bit of a niche audience. And there's somehow, you know, Taylor Twellman asking this panel questions and somehow Craig Burley asking this panel, which actually would just be high comedic value just because of Craig and his love of U.S. soccer. You know, it's interesting. I can't, you know, I don't make those decisions. Would I like to watch it as a fan? I think it would be very interesting. I'll tell you, it very interesting race right now. It just gets more and more interesting. And I think it's good for soccer because, you know, it keeps it in the, conversation. I'll give you a little, I don't know when you guys are going to post this, but we, Twellman has a sit down with, Commissioner Garber. And rather than, you know, bring him out to the set at halftime live, we thought, hey, wouldn't it be better if we could get more time? There's so many topics. Can we get a longer sit down? So he's graciously offered to sit down for quite some time with Mr. Twellman. And certainly, you know, the race will be a topic among lots of topics. But, you know, it's good for business to have this all going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, it'd be wonderful television. The interview with Don Garber, the sit-down interview, is that going to be on Saturday or at another time that's going to air?
No, it'll be Saturday. But here's sort of our feeling about it is we're shooting it Thursday night. We're going to edit it Friday, but I'm going to give it to, you know, we like to get news out there fast, so we'll give it to ESPN FC. It'll be on digital, so there'll be snippets all over the place. So there'll be plenty of, the goal would be, you know, to get virtually all of it somewhere for you guys.
Excellent. Well, yeah, definitely looking forward to that. Well, Amy, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and we really appreciate your time. And best of luck to you with this weekend with the MLS Cup final. We'll definitely be watching, and I'm sure we'll be talking about the TV coverage, both Kartik and I, probably in the next podcast.
Do you think you'll be gentle or not so much? I'll just have to decide. Am I pulling over at a rest stop, or am I going to continue to drive? And you guys tell me. No, all kidding aside, we here at ESPN definitely take feedback. I mean, the soccer the soccer television community is in my, I've worked on a lot of sports, is the most passionate. And you hear about it if you do something wrong. So, you know, we really, we want to hear what you want. And if we're doing something that is drastically against what you want, we're going to try to change that because, you know, we're here for you. So, you know, keep those comments coming.
We will, absolutely. So we will definitely still remain honest as always, and for the, both the positives and the negatives and the in-betweens. But Amy, once again, thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, Kartik, so where can listeners find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at KKFLA737 and Facebook, Kartik Krishnayer, Google Plus, same thing with my name. And obviously writing over at World Soccer Talk, among some other places. WorldSoccerTalk.com is our website.
Yeah, and I believe probably next week, Kartik, I think we'll probably do our last episode of the year before we take a break for the holidays. So definitely tune in for that one next Thursday. Definitely thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and WorldSoccerTalk.com. And if you like the show, share it with your friends or on social media or give us a review on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it. And Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.